thank you for the conference organizers for inviting me to this wonderful place. And I'd like to also thank my collaborators in this endeavor, mostly Paul Kaminski and Francois Lever on the very beginning. And I'm going to talk about the subject, which preferential attachment networks, which I guess is a bit of controversy among computer science people, like is this even a reasonable model for anything. But what I do want to proceed with this because what I want to try and get across is that there's a very nice tool in my field, which is statistical physics, that allows you to essentially solve almost everything that you could ever want to ask about this. And some of these results, I think, I mean, some of these have all been published in various places, but I think that a lot of people outside of physics are unaware of most of these results. And what I've already seen, some of my talk has already been given in three of the talks yesterday, which is very helpful because I can go a bit faster. And so we'll see a different perspective on some of these same results. So I'll talk about the degree distribution, which is sort of the standard local measure of these networks. I'll also talk about various tweaks on the original model, the fitness model that Christian spoke about yesterday, the role of redirection and copying, which really is quite cool because it shows how unstable the linear preferential attachment process is. And a little bit about, do the rich really get richer, which is like if you're early in the network, how rich do you get? And finally, I'll talk about the effect of finiteness in the network and the role of fluctuations, which also we heard a little about yesterday about the notion of diversity of networks. So first of all, this is a myopic talk. I'm going to discuss mostly our approaches, but as far as I can tell, the first person who looked at models of this type was Yule in 26, and then there's Simon in 55, and I guess he was almost 40 years ahead of his time, and so he wasn't recognized as the father of networks. But he won a Nobel Prize, so I guess he could survive it. Barabasi Albert, even though maybe they weren't really the first to discover the original model, I mean, one thing to say about this period of the late 90s was that there was this wonderful confluence of data and theory, so that, you know, there was a lot of data to inform the theory, and so he was at the right place at the right time with the right model.
Simon was an
economist, right? Pardon me? Yes, Herbert Simon, right. And so the work that I'm going to be describing, there's a lot of parallel results by the group of Dor, Gofseth, Mendez, et al. So I won't refer to everything because I have too many references. So anyways, the preferential attachment network. We have a network that is ordered by the time in which nodes come into the network. So the numbers here are representing when a node enters the network. And then the rules of the game are that you introduce nodes one at a time, and you attach to one, and so I'm only looking at a specific class of models where you attach to only one earlier node that has k links attached to it already at a rate ak, the attachment rate. So this is the microscopic input that then drives how the system evolves. So here we are adding nodes one at a time. And you see the last node that came in, node one had already a high degree, and so if it's preferential attachment, node one is more likely to get hit by node nine than anything else. And so what we want to do now is study the structure of this network. So I want to now present to you the master equation approach. And the basic observable is the degree distribution, the average number of nodes with k-links. And notice here there's the word average, which if you really want to be precise a mathematician, this is important. And so here comes like the most important equation in the talk, and everything else is commentary, which is the master equation that describes how the number of nodes of degree changes each time you add a new node to the network. So in this description, there's no notion of time because I'm adding nodes one by one, and every time I add a node, the number is increasing, and so the number of total number of nodes is like my timeline variable, so I don't have to worry about time. So how does this degree distribution changes? And there's three ways it can change. First of all, I can attach to a node of degree k minus one with an attachment rate a sub k, and then I've got to divide by the total rate of anything happening to make this a probability of attaching to a node of degree k minus one. And so this is the gain term in the master equation. And then there's a corresponding loss term because I attach to a node of degree k with a rate a sub k divided by the total rate of anything happening. And finally, see, if I'm only attaching to one node at a time, I'm also creating a node of degree one with each attachment event. And so I have, this is my master equation.
I guess I don't understand what you mean by the rate of attachment. So time is just small.
I don't have any time, I just have nodes. So each time I have
nodes. So what's capping?
So what
your total rate mean?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. So here it is. So my attachment rate, okay, so I should have put this up earlier, thank you. So I'm going to be considering a general class of models with the attachment rates of power law, with gamma can be anything. And the total rate of anything happening is just the sum of the concentration of nodes of degree j times the rate of attaching. So this thing's the total rate. So that's my normalization factor.
So,
yeah.
I think
A sub j is that is the input parameter of the model. It's the rate at which you're going to attach to a node of degree j. So I specify from the outside. Linear preference.
So I'm ready to. I have my next stage. Here's my new node.
Right.
I somehow decide where I'm going to attach.
Correct.
And there's an A in there someplace.
That's right. So
right.
It's
like a Poisson clock with rate A sub j.
No, but the thing is that, for example, if I have linear preferential attachment, A sub k is equal to k, that would say I look at all the nodes in the network, and if one guy has degree 5 and another one has degree 10, I will attach to the node degree 10 twice as likely as to the node degree 5. There was another question in the back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a comment that this is an undirected network, even though in the drawing you have the
correct. That's right.
I just also wanted to say that if you want to prove this stuff, when you write down the master equation, if you actually take an average, then you're essentially averaging the numerator separately. You're saying that the expectation of the numerator over the denominator is the expectation of, and it requires a lot of work, and that's why the Rigger's papers are really long. One of the reasons to prove that the denominator is sufficiently concentrated.
Exactly.
That you can do that.
That's correct. So yes, there is this notion that there is a bit of sloppiness here because I talk about average, but you don't see averages here, and I'm just kind of swept it.
Right. So you said the average of the numerator over
the
denominator is the average of the numerator over
the average. Exactly. Great. Thanks for the help. Okay. So the thing is, how do we solve these equations? And you know, in statistical physics, when you're presented with some kind of a master equation, the first step you might do is look at equations for the low-order moments of the distribution. And so let's look at the most trivial moments, the zeroth moment, which is j to the power 0, nj. And I'm looking at the time derivative, where again, time is the number of nodes in the network. And so the over dot means time derivative. So how does the zeroth moment change with time? Well, if I sum up over all j, that's just the number of nodes in the network. And so I'm adding them one by one. And so this thing just grows nj dot is 1. And similarly, the first moment, which is basically twice the number of nodes in the network, because I have some j nj, which is the number of links endpoints in a given node. And when I sum up over all nodes, I just get twice the number of nodes. And so m1 dot also changes in the same way. So the main point here is that the zeroth moment grows linearly with n, the first moment grows linearly with n, and so it suggests that if the attachment rate is anywhere between sublinear to perfectly linear, that this total rate, which is the gammath moment of the distribution, which lies between the zeroth and the first moment, also grows linear with n. So let's make this assumption. And also, if you start playing around with the first few of the equations, you'll see that, and which we've already seen in previous talks, that the total number of nodes of degree n is equal to the total number of nodes in the network times the density, which no longer depends on the size of the network. If you want to be, I have a comment for later on. Anyways, the point is that if you make these two assumptions and plug them into the equation, so there's a total n downstairs, and there's a total n upstairs, and they just cancel, and so you convert this rate equation to a linear recursion formula, which then you can just solve directly and no ambiguity about it. And so here is, again, the recursion formula from last slide. And if you just play with it and solve it, this is the formal solution to the problem. So a nice feature about this approach is that you get, without any ambiguity, a relatively nice solution. Unfortunately, this solution is not very helpful because it's so implicit. So let's try and look at some explicit results. And so let's look for the case of power law preferential attachment, where the power law is any number. Typically, we're thinking about positive preferential attachment, but you could also do negative preferential attachment if you want to be pathological. So the case where the, there's a mistake here. This should be gamma. So in the case where it's sublinear preferential attachment, what we get is a stretched exponential. So if you just plug k to the gamma inside of here, just do some very standard asymptotic analysis. This comes out with very little work. And the point that I want to make about this is that, at least in the framework of this model, this is the universal and generic behavior. There's a regime where it does not depend on the distribution does not depend on the exponent and a stretched exponential. And so from the perspective of statistical physics, we might call this the universal regime.
What was N sub k?
N sub k is a density of nodes of degree k. Let's now look at some other cases.
Can you go back?
Where do you want to go back to?
Well, no, I'm happy with this.
Okay.
So your delta K1
yes.
In the previous equation was not multiplied by N. So when you divide by big N, how come there's something left?
I'm sorry. That's typographical errors. That's thank
so
you.
So it should just be not.
That's cut and paste
right.
error.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so here's typographical error number two. anyways, let's look at the case of very high degree. And so there's a phase that we call the Bible phase when gamma is larger than 2. But what happens here, if you think about it in terms of citations, is that somebody writes a paper that's so famous that everybody cites only that paper and nothing else. And so this happens when gamma is larger than 2. And let me give you a little feeling about how the Bible could get created in this limit. So suppose that we have our Bible, and so every subsequent node that's coming to the network is referring to the Bible, and so we have n of these, you know, secondary papers that are all referring to the Bible, and how does this process go on forever? So here comes another node, and according to the rules of the game, if I have n plus 1 total nodes, so n nodes in the periphery, and here's my next node, I'll attach a new node to the Bible with a probability of the attachment rate, which is n to the gamma, divided by the total rate, which is the rate of attaching to the Bible, and the rate of attaching to everybody else that doesn't matter, which is n. So this is the probability at a given stage that I would continue propagating the Bible. And so the probability that the Bible actually exists up to, you know, as I let this process go on forever, is just the product of this factor from n equals 1 to infinity. And you can see right away that this product is 0 if gamma is less than or equal to 2, and non-zero for gamma greater than 2. So gamma is larger than 2, we have this Bible phase where there's a finite probability that everybody attaches only to the Bible and nothing else. So a rather boring society because we all read the Bible and we have nothing else to talk about. Let's go back now to the case gamma between 1 and 2. And so this is, and I'm really bad at coming up with names, this is what we might call the bestseller phase, where it's almost, but not quite, the Bible. There's still something which is very well cited, and then there's a little sort of riffraff of people citing lesser papers. And let's see what happens there to give a sense of it. So this bestseller phase, first fact is that this total attachment rate, which was the gamma moment of the degree distribution, if there is one node that still has of the order of n node links attached to it, then this sum, I'll have one node that has degree n, and so this sum is of the order of n to the gamma. So let me make this assumption here. It actually can be shown that it's correct assumption, but I can't explain it. So let me just make the assumption on the intuitive argument, and let's see what are the consequences of that for each individual rate equation. So here's the rate equation for n1. So we added a node of degree 1, that was the input, and then we could lose because we could attach to a node of degree 1 with a rate n1 over the total rate. So let's just solve this equation in the simplest possible way, which is I just want to estimate asymptotically what's going on. So I just want to look at which of the three terms in this equation I can ignore. And I argue that if A is going like n to the gamma, n1 is not going to grow any faster than linear at n, and so this ratio is less than 1, and so I just throw it away, and then you immediately solve it, n1 goes like n. Then I can do the same thing with the equation for n2. So we add to n1 with a rate k to the 1 to the gamma times n1 over n to the gamma, and then you subtract, you lose because you attach to a node of degree 2 with a rate 2 to the gamma n2. And again, in the same spirit, this term is negligible compared to the first term, and if you throw this away, then it's easy to solve asymptotically, and you've got that n2 grows slower than linear in n, but it grows positively with n. And then you do the same thing for N3, and you sort of see what the pattern is. And so the general pattern is that the number of nodes in degree k grows sublinearly with the size of the system, as long as this exponent happens to be positive. And so let's give a little picture of what's going on here in this bestseller phase, which is that when gamma is larger than 2, one has the bipole. One has the bipole in which you have one node of degree n, all other nodes of degree 1, and there's no other nodes of degree greater than 1 except for the bipole that I'm just not putting on here. Then, again, looking at where this exponent changes from positive to negative, there's a transition at between gamma 2 and 3 halves. There's one type of behavior with another transition at 3 halves, where the number of nodes of degree 1 grows linear in n, with number of nodes of degree 2 growing slower than linear in n, but still positive, and there's no other nodes faster than a degree higher than 2. I mean, there are no order 1 in an infinite network. Except for the bestsellers, the gel phase, which I'm just not writing down. And similarly, another transition at 4/3, where one has n1 growing, n2 growing slower, n3 growing slower, and then nothing beyond that except for the bestseller.
So
and
how does the bestseller grow? Does it
always is n. And this pattern continues on, and then there's an infinite sequence of transitions that ends when everybody grows linearly with n. And so this is the case that most of us have been discussing previously, where things are kind of natural, there's a scaling with the size of the system, but there is this very bizarre behavior with this whole infinite sequence of phase transitions with different types of scaling of the nodes of different degrees. So now let me go to the case that we're probably all familiar with, which is the power law regime. And so in the case where the attachment rate is asymptotically linear, then one finds a power law. And the important point I want to emphasize is that the exponent does not depend, I mean, the exponent is non-universal. It can be any number which is larger than 2. And again, for people who were like myself, who grew up in statistical physics and the whole dogma of critical phenomena, we learned that whenever there was power laws, it meant that things happen in all scales, and so short-range details didn't matter, and so you should see exponents that did not depend on anything. So that's all crap for this system. In fact, the exponent is extremely sensitively dependent on short-range details of the model, as I'll explain to you momentarily. One special case that's very famous is the purely linear preferential attachment, and in that case, if you plug that into this formula and work it out, you get this famous formula that sort of appears in Simon, and then you had mentioned that Polish guy in Random Structures and Algorithms, and my impression is that in that journal, Random Structures and Algorithms, this formula appears like more than once, that just is hard to find it. I don't know how to penetrate the journal. But anyway, so that's a very beautiful formula, and it's important to appreciate that if you really want to get it right, there's a k plus 1 and a k plus 2, and those things actually play an important role. All right, so first of all, why am I even caring about linear preferential attachment, or why should we care about it? So let me now come to a little bit of data to try and validate why a linear preferential attachment might be reasonable. And so what I'm showing to you here is an actual measurement of the attachment rate based on the distribution of citations for the entire physical review data set. And so for those of you who are not physicists, Physical Review is the premier physics journal in the United States. It's been around since 1893. Physical Review was very nice. They gave me their entire citation data set. And so I took it, which is approximately 350,000 papers with a total of about 3.5 million citations. And I actually measured the attachment rate. So let's just focus, for example, on the black dots. And so it says 1893 to 1999. So what I did is I did all papers from 1893 to 1999 and measured the degree of each paper or the number of citations it received. The same thing. And then I took all papers that were published in the year 2000 and just measured what was the probability of attaching to a paper of a given degree k. And so that is the measurement of attachment rate versus number of citations for the degree. Now, the thing is that the number of papers that has more than 100 citations in Physical Review is 2% or something like that. So all the data is actually here. I mean, all of this stuff here is just like those very few famous papers. And so here is a blow-up of what happens close to less than 100 citations. And you know, it's hard to see on the screen, but if you look at this carefully, it really is, to the eye and to measurement, very good linear behavior. So this is one thing that I find truly mind-boggling, which is, yes.
So, but in this case, you only looked at the inlinks, right?
That's
so
right.
This is a directed.
I'll look at the outlinks in a minute.
Okay.
I have something different to say about the outlinks. Yeah. But anyways, the point here is that why do you get linear preferential attachment from a process that has nothing to do with linear preferential attachment? So, to me, it's a mystery. Okay. So, hopefully you believe from this that at least a linear preferential attachment rate is a reasonable conclusion to draw from this data. Now, please, yes.
What's the mystery? I mean, we hardly read journals by themselves. We just need some papers, and if they cite something interesting, we might look that up.
Right.
So that would generate the linearity, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if I just look at one paper and then look at the one reference.
You arrive at a paper via a reference.
Right.
So you read a paper and it is a reference to some other paper, you read that other paper.
But then why don't you cite the paper that you read first?
Because the final information is in that paper.
Well, okay. I mean, you're kind of anticipating part of what I'm going to talk about next, but if I can give the punchline to my talk, I mean, the end of my talk is going to say, like, why is it that you have a process that, you know, looks like a duck, walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, but turns out to be linear preferential attachment? And that's the way I put it. All right, anyways, why worry about linear preferential attachment? So let me now just show you a kind of little homework exercise, which is let's consider the following process of an attachment rate, which is AK equals K, if K is larger than or equal to 2. And A sub 1 is just some number alpha, which can be anything. And then if you go through this formalism of substituting into this formula and doing a bunch of rigmarole that's very standard, what comes out is a degree distribution, which is power law, but the exponent depends on this number alpha. And so if alpha is equal to 0, then you get an exponent, which is 2. Which is a lower limit in this family of possibilities. And as alpha goes to infinity, then the exponent goes to infinity. So again, a little dorky detail. Do you attach to a node of degree 1, which are the relevant nodes? Do you attach at the rate 1 or rate 3 halves or rate 17? That completely changes the nature of the problem. So it's really quite, I think, a striking result. So there was a little bit yesterday about node fitness, so I wanted to say a few words about this, the model introduced by Bianconi and Barbossi, who talked about Bose-Einstein condensation. And this is only to show that this whole master equation formalism can be done line by line in what I've shown before, and you can get the degree distribution. So imagine that I now have a fitness associated with each node, and so now I can look at the degree distribution of nodes of degree k and fitness eta, and there'll be an attachment rate which depends on both its degree and its fitness. And so, in the same spirit as before, one can write a master equation in this form, where the total rate is the sum over all degrees of AK, NK, and summed over all fitnesses as well. And if you just sort of go through that same machinery, there is this formal solution to the problem. And if you take, for as a specific example, this attachment rate, which is linear in the fitness and linear in the degree, then one can write down an explicit answer. And it has a power law degree distribution, which depends now on the fitness distribution itself. And the thing is that what's missing here is that there's this number mu, which is the amplitude in the attachment rate. The total attachment rate A was equal to mu n. And that can be obtained self-consistently by saying that the total attachment rate is this, and plugging in each of the pieces into it. One gets a self-consistent equation for the amplitude. And the main point here is the upshot of this rule is that if you have arbitrary charm, so that if the support of the distribution is infinite, then one gets Bose-Einstein condensation. And if the charm is bounded, then one gets a power law degree distribution modified by logarithms, which discuss some details of how the distribution of charm goes to 0 at the upper limit. So this is just a bit of an aside, but kind of cute, I think. Now, there was a comment about looking at the reference to a paper, and so I want to talk a little bit about why linear attachment is maybe more generic than one might expect. And this is the process that we call random attachment plus redirection. And so this is based on a suggestion in a paper by Kleinberg et al. And so the idea is the following, which is suppose you have a network and you want to build it up in a node-by-node fashion, and I'm going to do it by the following rule. So here's a new node, and I pick a target purely at random, and with a probability 1 minus r, I will go to that target. But then there is an ancestor to the target, and with a probability r, I go to the ancestor. So from the point of view of an algorithmic approach, if you're simulating these networks, this is pretty trivial because you just have the list of nodes in the network, and so you just go to a random target, and some of the time you just go to its ancestor. So it seems like random attachment, but it turns out to be linear preferential attachment for the following fundamental reason, which if you ask for a given ancestor, what is the probability you could have reached it? You have to count how many upstream neighbors it has. And so the probability of getting redirected to an ancestor is proportional to the number of upstream neighbors. And so guys that have higher degree are going to be picked out more likely with this approach. So in fact, this redirection process is linear preferential attachment in disguise. And let me show it to you by actually solving the master equation. So here's the master equation for random attachment. I now have, for the denominator, instead of being...
Just clarification. You seem to use the word random when you really mean uniform.
Yeah, fine, thank you. Yeah, I mean uniform.
Does that stand? That seems to be so.
That's sloppy terminology.
So when you use the word non-random, you don't mean not random. You mean
non-uniform. Yeah.
Just a point. Some people mean when they say non-random, they mean something like deterministic.
Okay.
That's a different terminology.
Yeah.
Between the math.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, is that thank standard you. In physics to call something?
It appears to be standard in physics that non-random means not uniformly
okay.
random.
It's
okay.
not standard, it's standard sloppy.
if I may have the floor, let me admit to being sloppy and let me continue.
Okay, no, just clear yourself.
Fine. Okay. Anyways.
Have
so,
to atone for the sins of your whole community.
Yeah,
but that is new. When I grew up, radioactivity was when.
Okay.
So radioactivity is not one.
Okay.
I'm supposed to oversee.
Master equation. So in the case of uniform attachment, so the master equation has in the denominator the total range of the total number of nodes. And there's no longer k minus 1 and k because I'm attaching just proportional to the number of nodes and not to its degree. So this part times 1 minus r is precisely the original process. But then there is the redirection part. So the probability r, I redirect, so there's an r in the numerator. And now the rate at which I attach to the node degree k minus 1 is proportional to the number of its upstream neighbors, which is k minus 2, and then a similar loss term of the same type. And then if you just rearrange this, then you see that what's sitting in front of nk minus 1 is something which is k plus a constant. And so in fact, what you get here is shifted linear attachment rate, k plus a constant, where the constant can be tuned to any value between minus 1 and infinity. And it's truly, this is precise, that there is a one-to-one mapping between this redirection process and the shifted linear attachment rate. So the point I want to make here is that we have a rule which is order one in the sense of algorithmically, if I try to simulate a large network, you do two steps to find, to attach, and you get this global shifted linear preferential attachment. So with this process, it's really easy to simulate networks of a billion nodes with no problems. It's really no big deal. Let me just also mention that if you can solve the shifted linear attachment completely, you just substitute this attachment rate into this formula. And you know, again, once you're into this game of dealing with gamma functions and all these sorts of recursion formulas, it all looks trivial. But if you're not used to it, it looks overwhelming. But it's really extremely simple. And you end up with this exact formula for nk. And then in the form of the ratio of gamma functions, it's easy to extract the asymptotic behavior. And one sees, again, that it's any exponent, which can be between minus 2 and infinity, depending on this number lambda, which depended on something dorky in the model, which is just the probability of going to the ancestor relative compared to going to the originally selected node.
This density, though, this is for large k. For smaller k, if you take r to be close to 1,
then
this is going to actually convert us to a Poisson distribution, a negative exponential distribution, rather than a...
Well, the thing is, when r is equal to 0, when r, the redirection...
Oh, sorry, I'm saying when you're doing...
When r is 0, there's no redirection. When there's no redirection, the redistribution is exactly 2 to the minus k. And it's exactly an exponential. But as soon as you have any redirection at all, then it's this form. It's just that it's a, it could be extremely high power when the redirection is almost.
Well, it's this form for large k, but for most of the bytes,
no, no,
it's smaller
this,
k.
This part is exact. This thing of ratio gamma functions is exact. When k is large, then it goes to this thing.
Yeah.
But this
so
part
I'm saying
is exact.
That, yeah, it, it's
yeah.
This
yeah.
Second part is somewhat misleading in the sense that the shape of the distribution.
Yes, it, absolutely.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay, now let me talk about another process which is in the same genre as redirection, which is copying, which again, from when I was a student, and for the younger people in this audience, I mean, I was old enough that I had to actually type my thesis on a typewriter, and when you looked for references, you had to go to the library and like open up the musty journal, et cetera, et cetera. So it was a real pain in the ass to find references, and so copying is something that any lazy person like myself would naturally do, and the idea is the following, which is here is some citation network. And so I am now this new person writing my thesis, and I say, okay, let me refer to Ising because, you know, I worked on the Ising model for my thesis. But then since, you know, I have to, like, fill up the references to my thesis, I've got to now put some other papers. So what I do, I look at Ising's paper, and I just refer to everything that Ising referred to. So Ising referred to, you know, Van Vleck, and then he referred to Kelvin. So I also referred to the ancestor nodes. So the model here is that you pick a random target, and then you refer to your, the random target and all ancestor nodes. And let's see what happens with this, because it's really kind of cool, which is that it gives rise to a process which sometimes is known as densification. And in some sense, this model is was motivated by looking at data, at least in the early late 90s and early part of this millennium, about the fact that for ASs, which are always growing with time, that the degree was growing extremely slowly with time, even though the size of the ASs were growing rapidly. So I don't want to do the full master equation. I just want to talk about the evolution of the average number of links in a network of n nodes. So here is the equation, and here's the cartoon that accompanies the equation. If I have n plus 1 nodes in the network, how does the number of links change? Well, I have to have the number of links with n nodes in the network. And then I picked a node at random, number 4, for example. And since I'm picking at random, I have to sum up over all ways of picking with the 1 over n. And so the blue is the 1. But then I have plus the ancestors of that given node, is j alpha. So this thing is the number of ancestors of node alpha. And now I can sum over all nodes 1, that's n over n, that's 1. And when I sum j alpha over all nodes, then basically all I get is a number of links again. And so I end up with a very trivial evolution equation for the total number of links. And then you can do a little bit of manipulation, and one has a solution, which is n times the harmonic number sub n, where harmonic number of size n is just the sum of the inverse integers from 1 to n. And so asymptotically, this scale is like n log n, or the mean degree is growing like log n. There's actually something I'm going to sweep under the rug, but I'll mention it, you know, like bear the rug and show some dirt, which is that this process is extremely sensitive to the short-range details here. Like, you might say, well, suppose I don't refer to everything down the history tree, but just some of it, then everything is different. Let me now come back to say something about why we looked at this model, which was, again, to compare with physical review reference data. There was a question about the out degree. So when you write a paper, there's two natural degrees in the citation network. There's the reference list of your paper, which is the links out to the past, that's the out degree. And then hopefully when you write a paper, people would like to cite you, which is your in degree. And it turns out, if you look at the citation data physical review, it's really quite amusing, because in 1893, the average number of references per paper was 1. And so I'm plotting now the average number of references per paper, that's the dots,
yeah,
as a function of year. And so you see that it's growing with time. And if you plot on the same scale the logarithm of the cumulative number of papers in the entire physical review data set, and then you just shift it up and down to get rid of an amplitude, one gets at least a semi-reasonable fit between the logarithm number of papers and the out degree, which is at least it's an attempt to validate that the average degree is growing logarithmically with the size of the network. There's this weird thing here where it's like really doesn't fit at all, and that what I would say is the influence of the web, that now it's no problem to like just click on something and, you know, add 100 references to your paper and make you sound very academic, I guess.
But I don't know if you
heard about the work of one of our colleagues at UCLA, Vuane Roy Chowdhury, but he it's completely related to this model. So what he did was he studied typographical errors in references.
Oh,
so
this is the read before you cite business.
Yeah.
You're talking about Simkin and the other.
Simkin and Roy Chowdhury.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, I am aware of this, yes.
Oh, okay. Are you
yes.
going to mention it, or I mean?
No, because it's not.
Does
really
it get propagated? Is that the point?
Well, the point is that it propagates, exactly.
Right.
And so, of
yes.
course, if you were copying not just,
right.
I mean, really literally copying, that would, of course, explain this, and he had very good evidence that this was taking place.
Well, I'll give you a little anecdote that adds to this, which is that since I know the entire citation history of Physical Review, the most cited paper in all of Physical Review is Cohn-Sham. Density functional theory in 1965. That was a period of time when the Physical Review was just trying to deal with incredible growth. And they had this, what they thought was a brilliant but completely flawed idea of like splitting Physical Review into the A section and the B section. And so the paper was B 1164. And of the 3,300 citations that the paper had as of like 2003, 300 of them are to not B 1164, to page 1164. So 10% error rate. And so these things propagate in a very insidious fashion. Let me just mention very quickly.
There was this article that in science, I think 50% of all citations are copied. Something like that.
Yeah, it's a huge number.
Mm-hmm. They will estimate, of course.
Yeah. Let me talk a little bit about how the rich get richer, because there was also something mentioned in an earlier talk. And the point here is that I want to ask, if you're born with a silver spoon in your mouth, like if you're rich at the beginning, what's the problem that you stay rich with linear preferential attachment? So let me now change the notation slightly and define PKN as the probability that the first node in the network has degree K in a network that contains N links. And I just put a star beside here because N links in a tree network means N minus one nodes, but the formulas look nicer if I use N links, so it's just N minus, just to make the formula look simpler. So here's the master equation for the degree distribution of the very first node. If you had it, the first node, if it had degree k minus 1, you would attach to it at the rate k minus 1 over 2n. Or you could attach to a later node with a complementary probability. And so one could actually solve this master equation. I'm not going to bother doing it because it's even simpler to just look at the mean degree. So just take this equation, multiply by k and sum over all k. And one gets a simple recursion formula for the degree of the first node after n plus 1 links compared to n links. It's a multiplicative relation. That's an important aspect to this. And if you solve this recursion formula, again, it's a ratio of gamma functions. And it's really simple once you know how to play with these things, why it always looks like that. But to match to the initial condition, there is a multiplicative number here. And so the point here is that this degree is proportional n to the 1 half times something which is initial condition dependent. And because of the way that the system, this process works, is that, for example, if my initial condition is a little dimer, then this number lambda is 2. If my initial condition is a trimer, then I have two nodes pointing, and so this is the first node has degree 2 rather than 1, then this number is 8/3. And the point here is that this number depends in a non-trivial way on the initial condition, such that the initial wealth matters. So by the time you start with an initial degree of 4, your degree of the first node is a factor of 120 over 35, I don't know if it is, 3.5 or something like that, compared to 2. So it's like a huge percentage difference for the degree of the first node, depending on whether you start with $1 million in your bank account or $2 million in the bank account. It makes a big difference in the long run. On the other hand, for random, uniform attachments, the same game gives you just an additive constant and doesn't depend on the amplitude. So initial wealth doesn't really matter in uniform attachment. Let me now, in the last maybe 5 minutes or so, talk about the.
Well, actually, if this lambda should. I mean, I had yesterday the formula which was that it was square root of n over square root of your time at which you're
right.
born.
Right.
So one should be able to translate that asymptotically
absolutely.
Into how lambda depends on the degree.
Absolutely, yes. So let me now talk about finite networks, because here's something else that was a talk yesterday about the diversity of networks. And it comes to another point that I think is actually a mystery to me about networks. So what I'm now showing you is simulation data the Barabasi-Albert model, where we use this redirection algorithm. I'm showing you the degree distribution after 100 nodes, 1,000, 10,000, up to 1,000,000. And it's 10 to the 5 realization, so it's relatively high quality data. As you can see, there's not much fluctuation. And the dotted line is the so-called exact result, 4k, k plus 1, k plus 2. But you'll see also that the curve follows the data, and then there's a little bit of a bump, and then it falls off. A little bit of a bump, and it falls off. And what I want to focus on in this last 5 minutes is, what the heck is this bump? Why is it there, and can we understand it? And so the thing is that if there wasn't any finite size cutoff, we would write the degree distribution is equal to proportional to the total number of nodes in the network times its density. Because of finiteness, there is a cutoff function, which is cutting off this distribution. And in a physics sense, we would naturally write a cutoff function which depends on the degree divided by the maximum degree of the system. And one can estimate, if one has a power law degree distribution k to the minus 3 by some simple extreme values argument, one can estimate that the largest degree is of order n to the 1/2. The thing which is amazing about this is that this scaling function is incredibly sensitive to the initial condition. So if I start with a so-called dimer initial condition of just 2 nodes and 1 link, or a trimer with 3 nodes and with 2 nodes, I'm sorry, 3 nodes and 2 links, you've got very different scaling functions, and it's really it's quite sensitive. So the first thing that I want to do is I want to compute the scaling function. And so, first of all, here's what the scaling function looks like. This is now an even larger simulation with even more data. And so what I've done is I've multiplied by k, k plus 1, k plus 2, divided by 4 to get the scaling function itself. And so let's just focus for a moment on the dots, because that's what the data looks like. So how do we calculate this thing? So this is a bit heavy, but it's just before lunch, so I'm just going to whiz through just to give you a sense of how you do the calculation. So the thing is that we have our master equation for a finite system network, and in this form, it sort of calls out to just solve it by the master equation. So you just write down the master equation, substitute it into this thing, you get a differential equation. And it's a first order equation. You see this term here looks like d by d log of square root of n, and this kind of looks like d by d log of z1 minus z. And you know, you do a little bit of standard analysis, and with a lot of work after that, you can actually solve the generating function. And then you want to extract the asymptotic behavior of the in k space, and so you've got to plug in z close to 1, and you should do it close to 1 minus 1 over square root of n to make things simpler. And after a lot of work, this is what the scaling function looks like. Here comes another amusing aspect about this, is that this thing came from solving a differential equation. But the real process that you might simulate is you're adding nodes one by one. It's a discrete process. There's no derivative. And if one actually does the same machinery for the discrete process, this is the exact discrete scaling function. And they're not at all close to each other. So it's another important message, is that you better be careful if you're talking about finite networks and not confuse continuum and discrete, because you get very different results. And so this thing, the dotted line, is the solution was this continuum scaling function, which doesn't correspond to anything. And this thing, the red, is the discrete thing, which matches very well to the data. So one can apply this sledgehammer of the master equation really to the death and get very nice agreement with the data. Let me now talk for a minute about diversity of networks. And issues about degree fluctuations. First point, which was alluded to in one previous talk, was what is the role of finite n on the distribution of degrees? So we saw that in general, the assumption was that n sub k was equal to the total number of nodes times the normalized density. The first correction is of the form 1 over root n. And it's easy to check if you just plug this into the master equations that you'll get a self-consistent equation for a sub k. So it's a self-consistent thing. And in fact, there's an infinite series here of inverse powers of 1 over root n. And it's actually in the form of an asymptotic series. Another thing which you might ask for is, what is the distribution for nodes of a fixed degree? So for example, for linear preferential attachment, that formula 4 divided by k, k plus 1, k plus 2, says that 2/3 of the nodes are degree 1 in a large network. But you can ask, in a given realization, is it really 2/3? What is the probability of getting 0.8? Or what is the probability of getting 0.4? before. And the way that one goes after this is one writes down the exact discrete recursion formula for how the number of nodes in degree one changes every time you add a new node to the network. And so this is the exact discrete recursion formula that if you have number of nodes of degree, the number of nodes of degree one, with a probability equal to the number of nodes of degree one times the total number of links, you add to a node of degree one, and you don't change the total number of nodes of degree one because you added to one, so you killed it, but then by creation of a new node, you've added one new node. On the other hand, if you attach anywhere else in the network, then you add one to the number of nodes of degree one. So if you now average this recursion formula, or look at the second moment, you can solve for the mean degree of nodes, the mean number of nodes of degree one, the mean square number of nodes of degree two. And the upshot of all this calculational heaviness is that one finds, at least we can show explicitly for k equals 1, 2, 3, and then we run out of energy, but it seems like it's not going to work, is that the dispersion in the number of nodes of a fixed degree is linear in n. And in fact, that the distribution of the number of nodes of a fixed degree is a Gaussian distribution with a dispersion which is going like, with a variance is going like n.
Sorry, for 1, isn't that just the Fourier-Ernst key?
Isn't what?
For, as you said, for k equal to 1, this is just the Fourier-Ernst, right?
Well, you know, the thing is that I live in a different world, so I'm not sure I know who Fourier-Ernst is. But yes, I'd say that's the case. Second to last slide here is one other amusing thing, which I just put on as something I don't understand at all, which is the distribution of mean square degree. So take a large network, compute the, construct it, and then I sum up the mean square degree of every node summed over all the networks. And this is not a tightly distributed quantity. This is the distribution of the mean square degree, and so I'm plotting the probability of mean square degree as a function of the mean square degree. Why am I looking at mean square degree? Because for linear preferential attachment, the networks are sparse. The mean degree is actually equal to 2. And if I look at the average degree, it's a number which is very tightly distributed because the exponent is minus 3, and I'm looking at the distribution k times the distribution of scales is k to the minus 3, I get something which does not depend on the system size. But once I go to the second moment, then there's a divergence at the upper limit. One has this incredibly broad distribution of the mean square degree. So when you're looking at these high moments, this probability distribution of the second moment, it's showing that there's not really like an average sense to what a network. And in fact, that brings me to a question that I'll mention in a minute. But I hope I've given, first of all, summary. I hope I've given you a sense that the master equation is a very nice and appropriate tool to deal with these types of networks. And so, to my mind, there are two questions that I would like to understand better. And so the first one, I've already mentioned my punchline before. You have a process like citing papers in physical review. It has nothing to do with linear preferential attachment. It's a duck, and it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, but nevertheless, outcomes linear preferential attachment. And in fact, other people have done the same sorts of measurements on the World Wide Web and also have found linear preferential attachment for processes that you can't say that you have global knowledge of the network and ever refer to anything by linear preferential attachment. The second thing that I want to mention, which I think is an interesting open issue, which is what is an average network actually look like. Now what I have in mind here is that back in the days of diffusion-limited aggregation, there was a very nice piece of work by Robin Ball, who took an ensemble of these diffusion-limited aggregates, which are all very stochastic-looking and very beautiful, and they just superposed them all on top of each other. And after doing that, you got a beautiful diamond, and it showed there was something really simple underlying the average ensemble of all diffusion-limited aggregates. What's missing in my mind is the same kind of imprint of the average ensemble of all networks. What is the average, what is the imprint of this ensemble?